Hello neighbors, welcome to Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland, Labrador, and sometimes Iceland farm and food show. I'm Ivan Emke, your host. This is episode number 47. Today we're visiting a pig farm and agritourism operation in the north of Iceland, overlooking the impressive Eyjafjörður, one of the longest fjords in that country of fjords. As in our own province, the population of Iceland is eating more pork than it did years ago. Iceland, a country with about two-thirds of the population of Newfoundland and Labrador, has about 3,500 breeding sows, and that still isn't close to being enough to be self-sufficient in pork. As for us, we have about, I won't say, it's more than a bit embarrassing. What can we learn from Iceland's example when it comes to pork?
From too many consumers, we have this negative image. Mm-hmm. It's like it's a closed system and they don't know what we are doing inside their houses. I think it's very important for us to have a more positive image and show the consumers what we are basically doing. When I'm using one glass of penicillin, my colleague in Spain is using 60.
So you're using 1/60th of what he
is. Yeah, and this is the guy that I have to compete with. We have to be expert in everything.
Everything.
Here's a quick question. Which meat is the most popular in Iceland? If you've read the tourist literature, you may think it would be lamb, but you would be wrong. For sure, that used to be the case. In 1983, the average Icelander ate just under 5 kilos of pork per year and over 45 kilos of lamb and mutton. But by 2015, pork consumption had quadrupled. Now the average Icelander eats about 21 kilos of pork per year, which is about the average in Canada. And lamb, it's down to just under 20 kilos a year. How things have changed. But has this been good for pig farmers and for the pork sector? Let's check in. We visit with pork producer Engvi Stefansson. It's a crisp October morning. We're in the cozy kitchen on his farm just outside of Akureyri, a city just a bit smaller than Cornerbrook. There's the smell of strong coffee along with some great homemade bread and a rural station on the radio. Pull up a chair. Join us.
Did you grow up on a pig farm? Is that how you got into
this
it?
This is the farm.
This is the farm you grew up.
Yes, the first sow gave birth in 1971 here. My parents had the farm. 10 years ago, I bought another farm in Reykjadalur. That's like 70 kilometers in the east, and that was because then we had this new animal welfare regulations, and I have all the sows there. So 180 sows every Thursday. I go and pick up the wieners, and I raise them here.
Okay.
This finish it.
You finish them here then.
Yeah.
And how do you pronounce the name of your farm? Just so I get it right.
Teigur.
Teigur. Does it have a meaning in English?
Yes, Evan. It's like Teigur is like small field.
Small field. Okay.
Yes.
And how big is this farm here that you're on?
You've got around 200 hectares.
200 hectares.
Yeah.
Do people here in Iceland, do they choose local pork or do they know the difference? Like in the store, when your meat is being sold, does it say Icelandic pork on it?
I think if you're coming from rural areas, then you're a lot more thinking about where it's coming from. But I think most consumers, they are aware, and they like to choose domestic production. We have a problem regarding labeling in the stores. It's sometimes when you see the country of origin, then it's in very small tickets.
I see those small letters.
The retail stores, they really try to hide it for the consumers.
Okay.
We are always importing also a lot of beef. So now it's consumers want to have, they want to know the origin.
Yeah. Is it imported as frozen meat?
Yes.
So it's not imported as fresh?
No, but actually we had this of course we are not part of EU, but we had this...
But you still have to follow the regulations.
Yeah, exactly. And now it's we used to have this permission to have only imported frozen meat, but now it's EU has decided that we also have to import fresh meat. Okay. So that's a hot topic in politics today. Okay. I'm afraid in maybe next year we will have fresh meat imported.
Really? Does that raise a problem with disease or pathogens?
Yeah,
or
definitely. You know, you can imagine for us, the only country I can import genetics from is Norway, and it can only be from one quarantine special, and it can only be deep frozen semen. And that is because we have a good health standards and that we want to keep it.
Yeah.
And you can imagine, like now in Eastern Europe and even all the way to Belgium, they have the swine influenza, you know? Mm-hmm. And that is, of course, also coming with the fresh meat. So, and like MRSA, you know it?
Yeah.
Every farm in Iceland was tested half a year ago, all clean. And this is something, you know, like in Denmark, they stopped testing a couple of years ago. Then it was like 70-80% of the big farms were affected.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we have some good standards that we should keep. It's like with the antibiotics. When I'm using one glass of penicillin, my colleague in Spain, he's using 60.
Really?
6-0.
So you're using 1/60th of what they use.
Yeah. And this is the guy that I have to compete with. And I have to have this sauce loose and everything. And I can have no tail cutting, I can have no castrations of pigs. This is what we are complaining about.
Yeah. I guess probably the answer is no. If consumers appreciate the extent to which you've kept the pigs disease free and you treat them the way they are, it seems like there should be a price difference.
Yeah. I think it is. I think there is a small premium for domestic production. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the average consumer is willing to pay some premium, but of course you know how it is in every country regarding prices. You can't have much difference.
Yeah. So where do your pigs get slaughtered then? How close is that?
It's Akureyri.
Okay, so you're right just up the road.
Yeah.
So you're fortunate.
Yeah, very.
And they go on a sort of weekly basis or something?
Yes, weekly basis.
There's the Icelandic sheep and the Icelandic cattle, cow and so on. Is there an Icelandic pig?
Good question. But they brought some pigs with them when they were settling, and I think it was on the 17th century.
Okay.
They got all killed, so there was no Icelandic pig anymore.
Okay.
And they started to import again 120 years ago. So we had these pigs coming from Denmark or whatever. But 24 years ago, we made an agreement with the Norwegian Pig Farming Associations. So we started to import both semen and live animals. Mm-hmm. We had a quarantine station exactly in Trise, the island, small island here.
Yeah.
1994. And we have been cooperating with them since then. And now it's like 2 pigs mostly. Mm-hmm. And actually they were just opening AI station in Canada.
Okay.
So they are like the second biggest genetics breeder in the world.
Yeah.
We simply decided when we got this good genetics to quit using our own sows.
Yes.
Because they were...
Right.
Not so good. So, no, there is no...
Okay. What breeds are they? Are they...
We are using for the mother line, it's TN70.
Okay.
So that's a mix of Yorkshire and Landrace.
Okay, yep.
And the boar is like... Some of us have it mixed Landrace-Duroc, but we are moving more to Duroc. Also, the finisher, it's from TN70.
Okay.
And purebred Duroc usually.
Duroc, okay. Yeah. Okay. Those are all breeds that are around in Canada.
Yeah, too. I know.
But what are the size of the litter generally?
You know, if you ask the farmer, then everybody talks about 30 or something.
Right. Yeah.
But if you look at the official numbers,
then
we are really a little bit behind, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I think on average the farmers have like to the slaughterhouse 22, 23.
Okay.
Finisher per cell.
Yeah.
So, but I think actually it's like a few years ago we got the permission to start importing deep frozen semen. So now every farmer has this tank with deep frozen semen. We have to be expert in everything.
Everything, that's right. Yeah, he didn't know you'd be a genetic
scientist. We see it all. I think actually in 5 or 10 years, I think we will be getting more from the south than we do today. I think there would be no pig farming in Iceland today if we would not have been able to have this genetics from Norway. We would simply not be able to compete. Yeah.
Do you have to heat your barns or anything like that in the wintertime?
Yes, we have to do it especially for the weaners.
Okay,
Because they need so much temperature in your weaning. But for myself, like with the finisher, I'm not heating up. Yeah. Some farmers are doing it, but of course you have a lot of livestock in the houses.
Yes,
so
well, that
they are
does,
heating up a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
But of course when you have like minus 20, then the ventilation system is not working so much.
Yeah, that's right.
And then you have all the moisture to keep it in correct temperature.
Yeah.
So then it's good to have heating.
do farmers heat with the geothermal?
Yeah,
you've got a good advantage there.
That's basically the only thing we have cheap in Iceland too.
That's a band from Iceland called Sea Bear with their song I'll Build You a Fire. I'm talking with pork producer Engvi Stephensen on his farm close to Akureyri, Iceland. In this second section of the interview, we talk about the strict health and animal welfare regulations he needs to follow, as well as the high cost of imported feed, which is a familiar problem for us as well. Though they're working on increasing their barley production, by the way, some of the research done on this has included a scientist from our own provincial agri-foods department.
I'm working on a project with a full line 400 sows. I just did a presentation for the commune here 1 month ago.
So when you start having more animals, do you have to go to the community and you tell them your plans?
It's a long process. Now we have like this new animal welfare rules regarding pig farming, and the authorities, when they decided to start with it, they like of course looked into Europe, but basically they were looking in Scandinavia how they were doing it.
Right.
They ended up in Norway, where they have these very high standards. And actually, of course, we agree on it, and we like it. But the problem for us is like, we are competing a lot with imported pork, so we are losing like market share.
So where do they come from? What countries do they?
It's coming from Germany, Spain.
Oh, okay, from Central Europe.
So it's a lot cheaper, and they don't have to fulfill the same rules. Okay. So we are like complaining about, we are not competing on an even ground.
So are the rules about the space for each pig and things like that?
Like the sows, when they are in the farrowing pens, they have to be loose all the time.
Loose all the time, yeah.
So it's like just when they are giving birth, then you can close them up for maybe 1 or 2 days, but then they have to be free. So here you can see an overview over the Icelandic market. And
so that was 2012, you're importing just very small percentage.
Almost nothing, basically. And now it's like, it's almost reaching up to be 1/3 of the market.
1/3 is imported. So is that partly, I've heard people say that tourists influence that because they want to have bacon for breakfast.
Definitely.
People like me.
if we were able to meet all the demands in bacon, then we would have a lot of problem with all the parts of it.
The other parts of the pig.
So that's one part of the reason, tourism. But also it's like, we had this very long tradition with eating a lot of lamb, and now it's like we are moving more over to chicken and pork, so the consumer is changing its behavior. Actually, we have like 22 or 3 kilos per capita in consumption in lamb. Mm-hmm. And if you take EU and look at it as the average, mm-hmm. then it's like 2 kilos. So we have 10 times the consumption in lamb here in Iceland compared to EU. But even though it has dropped 50% since 1980, then it was like almost 50 kilos.
Why are people eating less lamb? Is it old-fashioned food?
I can't explain. It's like with my kids, they prefer the pork and the chicken.
That's quite a change, though.
Yeah, to drop
so much.
Yeah, and I think it's obvious that in the future this will continue like dropping the consumption in lamb. So they are suffering heavily now. You know, it's the Icelandic krona is strong, and they have been exporting, and now they are getting way too little income. Prices have been dropping heavily.
Are there more people then trying to get into pigs?
No, it's a huge investment.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, because if you want to start to be efficient pig farm today, mm-hmm. then you have to have a farm for, I would say, minimum 300 sows. Yeah. That's big investment. I think a little bit earlier than 1990, we were about 140. That was the peak, and now it's like less than 10 farmers.
Less than 10 pig farmers from 140.
Yeah. You have like 3,500 sows in the country. Less than 10 farmers.
Yeah, and they all have 300 to 500 sows or something.
The biggest one probably has like 1,500.
Okay,
yep. So there's one with almost 50% of the market.
Okay.
He's like running it on 5 farms.
So the cost of raising a pig would be more too, because you can't leave them out in the highlands for 3 months of the year.
No, you always have to keep it inside. Of course, over the summertime you can have them outside if they have some kind of hut. But the problem for us is like also regarding the expense of the grain. It's mainly imported. And the subsidy in Iceland in agriculture, if you decide to become a farmer, then the system is like it tries to get you in a certain direction, that is like producing lamb or milk, because there is the subsidy. But the other farmers like myself and chicken farmers and they don't have any subsidy.
But there's a subsidy for...
Yes, both for lamb and for milk. And like now, the subsidy for 1 kilo of lamb is a lot more than you are getting when you're doing it.
Oh, really? So you actually make more from the subsidy than from selling.
And the problem is like the authorities, they are not looking at the market. They are not saying, okay, let's allow the farmer to decide what he is best in. For me, it's a really old and not efficient system. The reason why I'm talking about this is like when we are competing to Europe, like we, the pig farmers, then even though we are getting barley, wheat, everything from EU, of course it's expensive when it's coming in the silos on my farm because of the transport. So what I would like to see is like we would take the subsidy more into growing barley, in the fields. And then the farmers can decide what they should do with it.
It would seem like if there's a real demand for pork and there's not enough supply, that would be an area where you'd invest, or the government would invest to try to build that.
Yes.
Are there organizations who help young farmers who want to start out? Or you say it's very difficult because it's expensive.
Actually, if you are a young farmer, I think if you're younger than 35 years old, then you can have a certain subsidy, and the authorities have this foundation, this company, where they decide who should get the subsidy. And if you are well educated in agriculture and have some good idea, then you get higher subsidy. That is a system that is actually something that was only, I think it started in 5 years ago or something. But I know it's a big problem, and probably all over the world, it's to get the young people to come and to continue.
Yeah. It's a challenge because people are interested in food and so on, but to actually start a farm, a commercial farm, is quite expensive.
Yeah.
Do they teach pig farming at the agriculture university?
No,
so there's no way you really learn by doing or asking other people?
No, that is one of my complaints. It's like the whole system from the authorities, it's like it spreads over also to the universities, because then, like my son, he's finishing college, 18 years old now, and he wants to go to this agricultural school, mm-hmm. and I think there is basically no teaching about pig farming.
About pig farming, yeah.
So if he wants to get some knowledge, he has to go to Denmark or some other countries.
Yeah.
I think this is also one of the problems, you know, if you don't have the education,
then
obviously it's difficult to get young people to start.
Yeah. You talked about the inputs, like the grain and so on, and the need to do more studies on growing barley here. Mm-hmm. Is that something that's being done by government or whoever else?
The government has this foundation. I think it's part of the university industry. So they actually have a couple of guys that have been working on barley, especially trying a lot of different varieties.
Yeah.
And we have been making progress, you know. But I think it takes time. It's doable. And then we talk about barley. Wheat is almost impossible in Iceland, but barley is doable. But the problem is, you have like every fourth year, then there is no crop.
Just takes a break,
So it's a risky business.
Yeah.
And I think the problem is, you're always competing with imported barley. The farmer in EU has had a lot of subsidy to grow it. So then it will always be difficult to grow barley in Iceland, unless you have the same subsidy, at least.
Yeah.
So that is what I'm talking about. Don't put money into maybe lamb or whatever that the market is not asking for. Put it in the fields.
Yeah.
When we had the collapsing in 2008, we came so close to be not able to feed the animals because the companies that were importing, they sometimes only have storage for couple of weeks. The situation was so extreme that nobody knew what was going to happen.
That's I'll Build You a Fire by the band Sea Bear. I'm in North Iceland on Engvi Stefansson's pig farm called Tegar. All farms in Iceland have names. In this last section, we talk about his plans for an expanded operation, which will include a cafe with a window through to farrowing pens, all to improve the relationship and understanding between farmers and consumers.
So this is a presentation you've done for the local community on...
Yeah, and this is this is like the roots in Iceland. I have to have like 600 meters circle that there can be no buildings.
No buildings within 600 meters of a pig barn.
Yeah, and then my colleagues in Denmark made this for me.
Okay.
And then it's like only 200 meters in Denmark.
In Denmark.
With rural houses. So
a house can be 200 meters. Okay.
Yeah.
And 600 meters from an urban area.
Yeah, exactly. So so it's funny, we're always talking about we all have all the legislation and all the laws from EU, but we always decide to do a little bit back.
Hoping that they'd follow your regulations.
And I was just showing the commute this, like here I have a guest house, visitors on booking.com and everything. And it's 37 meters distance.
Okay.
And we have like 9.8 on booking in review.
Yeah.
And I have some neighbors on the new area where I will be building worried, and they are in 1 kilometer distance.
Oh, really?
Here you can see the layout.
Also, there's the layout, and it will have 400 sows?
Yes. Yeah. And what I really appreciate is like this is for the finishers, and you have here this outside area.
Okay.
So they are on good days over the summertime, they can go a little bit outside.
Outside and root around.
And also the sows here. Here you can see my existing farrowing pens. So it's 3.84 square meters.
Mm-hmm.
I'm moving to 6.
Yeah.
So it's like 56% more area.
Do you have to have like mattresses for them to sleep on or whatever?
Yes,
like the bedding and stuff like that?
Yes.
Yeah.
this is my inside my finisher bar today, and this is like it will be a big pants and they will be able to move around. And I was in Netherlands October last year, looking at a 1,000 sow farm. But they had this visitor area coffee house.
Yeah, right. Looking into the big bar.
Yeah. And you could look into the finisher. Yeah. No, the farrowing pen.
The farrowing pen.
Yeah. And I really liked it. And this is like what I want to do also.
Oh, you would like to do
that?
Okay.
I think it's, we have like from too many consumers, we have this negative image. It's like it's a closed system and they don't know what we are doing inside the houses. And of course, we have to avoid diseases.
Yes, yeah. You can't just have people walking through.
Yeah. I think it's very important for us to have a more positive image and show the consumers what we are basically doing to have it more open. Mm-hmm.
So if you stay at the guest house, you'd be able to go down to the big barn and have coffee and watch the
Yes. Yeah. And this is actually, this will be the area.
Oh, there. Okay, yeah.
This is the area where they will be. And then, you know, then it's like they can come inside and look through the glass and they don't have to change clothes and everything.
Yeah.
So I will just have like screens and all other areas where they can look at the screen with camera and see what's going on other places. I'm very excited about this idea.
You know, back in Canada, the idea of farm, having a guest house but also a viewing area like that would seem courageous.
Yeah, okay.
Because people are, you know, there is some criticism of all kinds of farming.
Yeah,
you know?
So
people are worried that, well, do I really want to get into that and defend, you know, what I'm doing, rightfully so. But it seems like in Iceland here, there's a bit more willingness to say, this is what we're doing. We're at the top of the regulations. We're exceeding. Yeah. And I want to show you just so that you understand that.
3 years ago, we had this public media. There were some pictures taken.
Oh, I saw something in there.
It was just awful for us.
Yeah.
So I think it was a good kick in the ass for some of us.
Yeah.
You know, I think sometimes this is something that has to happen. Of course, what we are complaining about is like we are ready to go this road, but then in the same time it will be very difficult when they are always giving extra quotas to EU so they can import more.
Yeah.
That is what we are complaining about.
Yes.
Because it means the consumer has to pay more.
Yeah.
And I think this is like so small community in Iceland. And if you have a good project and you are able to show consumers everything is okay, I think it will spread around.
Yeah.
It's like this one, this salami here and this ham.
Yeah.
It's coming from this farmer that has this 1,500 sows.
Okay,
And he says to the consumer, I will never take 1 kilo of imported pork, just domestic, and he has been growing like this. Of course, not at least part of the consumers really want to buy Icelandic.
Yeah. What's your favorite Icelandic food?
I really like the lamb. If I go to a restaurant, then I want to have beef. Beef, you know.
The steak or whatever, or loin?
Yeah, loin.
Here I thought you'd say pork. I thought you'd say
I like it, but I've eaten so much of it.
That's right. You raise it, that's right. Like sheep farmer gets tired of sheep, yeah. Well, thanks for taking the time to chat. I'm going to have another piece of this wonderful bread.
And
now that I know the salami is local,
you have to try it.
I'll have to try it as well.
Do you want more coffee?
Just a little bit, that'd be great. Yeah.
Just a couple of notes here on events since that interview. Indeed, the regulations in Iceland have changed. They now allow the importation of fresh pork, not just frozen. That's a bit of a setback for domestic production, however you look at it. And Ingvi still has not received final permission to build that new barn of his. Two of his neighbors continue to be concerned about the potential smell. Ironically, both of these neighbors are farmers themselves, though they don't raise pigs. And yes, I did mention agritourism at the beginning. Ingvi's farm has a vacation cottage that's available for tourists. Despite being just 37 meters from a pig barn, they have an excellent rating on the web, 9.8 out of 10. Yes, agriculture done right can coexist with tourism done right.
I think if you're coming from rural areas, then you're a lot more thinking about where it's coming from, and they like to choose domestic production. We had this very long tradition with a lot of lamb. And now it's like we are moving more over to chicken and pork. So the consumer is changing its behavior.
This has been Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador and sometimes Iceland Farm and Food Show. To listen to other episodes of this show or for more information, go to fittoeatnl.ca. The song for today's show was I'll Build You a Fire from the Icelandic band Sea Bear. The theme music, Cluck Old Hen, was performed this week by the trio of Todd Phillips, David Greer, and Matt Flinner. This is a production of Kitchen Table Communications. I'm Ivan Emke. Join me again next time. Happy trails.
Let's allow the farmer to decide what he is best in.